Tonight's video is about a park ranger who works in the state of Montana at Yellowstone National Park by the name of Samuel, who him and his partner encounter some weird mysterious town that should not exist, that it resided on the national park grounds. And what they witness will terrify you. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. I must be going crazy. I could see a town that doesn't exist. My name is Samuel Baker. I'm a Yellowstone National Park ranger, and I need some advice. I spent my entire career fighting wildfires for the National Park Service, and after 2 decades in the field, I thought that I had seen everything. Then, about 4 hours ago, an entire town just appeared in the middle of Yellowstone National Park, and the other ranger and I are the only ones who've been in it. We're not alone, however, as you might expect from something appearing out of nowhere inside one of America's most famous parks. The town is home to many people, some of whom have been there for years. They all seem perfectly normal, but they aren't aware that they live inside a national park. My partner Thomas was the first to notice the town. He had driven into the valley a few hours before dawn one morning and saw a brand new sign on the road. "Welcome to Hungry Horse," it read. When he drove past the next bend in the road, he saw the motel. That's when he turned around to come and get me. The two of us had driven up the valley together in our trusty old Chevy Blazer, and taken the long way around because we hadn't wanted to pass through the town until we were sure what it was. We parked at the base of the mountain and hiked up. We walked across the railroad tracks and passed a small gas station with a lone oil drum full of diesel fuel and another filled with water. The street was lined with old cars, some of which looked like they had been there for a while, others which probably just arrived that morning. Hungry Horse wasn't a ghost town, or even abandoned. It was thriving. Thomas and I entered the town cautiously, because despite appearances, this place could be dangerous. While we didn't run into any trouble, we did notice that everyone seemed indifferent to the fact that they just appeared out of nowhere. Most of them ignored us completely, although a few gave us strange looks. "Some of the people look familiar," I said, looking over at Thomas. He nodded. "I know what you mean, Sam. I recognized a couple people in the diner, too. It's weird." "It's weird?" Those words echoed in my head as I watched a man carrying a bucket walk down the sidewalk. "It's weird," I repeated silently to myself. My eyes followed his movements. The man carried himself with confidence and purpose, but he never looked up at where he was walking. Instead, he stared straight ahead and continued forward without looking back once. He disappeared around the corner of a building, and I noticed another person staring directly at me. He was tall and thin, wearing a black hiking jacket. His face was pale and he was bald. He was standing in the doorway of a small coffee shop. He reminded me of the missing hiker we had searched for last week. That's when I realized why I recognized some of the people here. They are the people who have vanished from national parks. That's how we found out that almost every single person in Hungry Horse had been reported missing from national parks. We spoke to everyone we could find. Some refused the talk. Others were friendly enough. But none of them knew anything about why they were there. As far as they were concerned, they lived in Hungry Horse, Montana. They weren't sure exactly when they arrived there. A lot of them couldn't remember much before arriving in Hungry Horse. They also told us that they had been here for years. Some of them had been born and raised in the town and believed it was the real deal. They all knew the town folk by name and went to school with them. One woman, an elderly lady named Irene, told us that she had no idea that she had been reported missing. She worked at a local hardware store and had been living in Hungry Horse for more than 45 years. "What about your husband?" I asked. "Do you have children? Grandchildren?" She shook her head. "No, I've never been married." "How do you feel about being here? Do you miss anywhere else? Your family, maybe?" Again, she shook her head. "Not really. This is my home." As far as she knew, this was the only home she had ever known. I tried to ask if she missed her family, but she just smiled and told me that her family was right here in Hungry Horse, Montana. We thanked her and left the hardware store. Hopping back into our park ranger truck, we drove deeper into the town. "I really don't like this, Sammy," Thomas said. "I've had a bad feeling of being watched ever since we entered town." I looked over at him. He was staring at a man standing by a large semi-trailer outside the diner. The man was holding a jug of milk. I couldn't help but think of the hiker we had found dead last week. "Sam, are you listening to me?" I snapped back to reality and looked at my partner. Thomas had started quivering in fear. "Sorry, what did you say?" "I said I think we should leave. I don't want to be here anymore." I looked around the town. There were so many people here. So many people who shouldn't be here. All of them were perfectly normal. Some of them even knew each other. How could there be so many people in a town that didn't exist? "I agree. Let's go," I said. We drove away from town and back to the ranger cabin. Thomas was still shaking. "I'm going to call this in," he said. "This whole thing is bullshit, but we better document it anyways. I mean, how could an entire town full of people just appear in the middle of Yellowstone?" I nodded. "Okay, I'll be in the cabin. I think I need some time to process all this shit." I sat down on the couch and closed my eyes. It all felt unreal. I kept thinking about the hiker we had found out in the woods last week. He had died while out on a hike in the wilderness. He had been alone and confused. But I just saw him alive and well in a town that doesn't exist. I opened my eyes and looked around. I took in a deep breath and let it out. It smelt like wood smoke and pine. I stood up and started pacing the room. "What am I supposed to make of all this?" I asked myself. "Is this some kind of sick joke? Did the government put a town in Yellowstone for some reason? What if it's not a town? Maybe it's a cover-up for something worse," I thought before zoning out. There was a knock at the door. It startled me out of my daydream. "Come in," I yelled. Two men came inside, both dressed in black suits. "Are you the one in charge here?" one of them asked. I looked at him and nodded. The guy was wearing a badge on his chest and a gun on his hip. He looked like an FBI agent. "I'm about to go and talk to them. I don't know if they'll believe me. What the F do I do?" First off, let me clarify some things from my first post. I was a wildland firefighter up until a year ago when I decided I needed a change of pace. They weren't FBI agents. They said they were from a private company that deals with the otherworldly. I sat in front of two men, waiting for them to start asking questions. "So, do you know why I've been assigned to this case?" the taller of the two said. "You're the only one in the park who knows anything about this." I nodded. Thomas also knows, but I think the guys already knew that. It's pretty weird. "The town you described doesn't exist. not according to the GPS and satellite data. Yes, it does, I answered, surprised. It's a lie, the second man said. He had short blonde hair and wore glasses. We checked every single point of the map, every house, every business. There is nothing there. Bullshit. You can't tell me you've been everywhere in the park and haven't noticed it, I said angrily. When I first came to the park, I saw the sign for Hungry Horse. I thought it was a joke at first, but then I saw the motel, the gas station, the diner, the hardware store, and saw people inside them. The man with the glasses nodded slowly. But we've checked every inch of the surrounding area. We've looked at the aerial photos, satellite images. We've even flown over the valley with the helicopter. Well, maybe you should have a look again. Maybe you missed something, I said defiantly. We did. There's nothing there. It's not possible. Do I have to frickin' show you where it is myself? I asked. Both men exchanged glances. Then the shorter one nodded. Very well. If you're so sure you've seen something unusual, we'll take you there. Thank you, I said. I got out of my chair and followed the two men out of the cabin. They were in their early 50s, both with short hair and blue eyes. They were talking quietly to one another as I followed them out of the cabin to their unmarked car. Now, the man with the glasses said, if you could just lead us to your town. Sure, I replied. We drove deeper into the park. Our vehicle was equipped with a topographical GPS system, which made it easy to navigate through the rugged terrain. After an hour of driving, we came to a hill overlooking a wide valley. We passed the sign for a Hungry Horse. Did you see the sign? I yelled. The men just looked at each other. I'm sorry, what? The shorter one asked. There's a sign here. It says Hungry Horse, right? The man shook his head. I don't see anything. He pulled off the road and stopped right before the sign. Maybe we should get out and look again, he suggested. I agreed. I got out of the car and ran over to the sign. It's right here, I shouted. He walked up behind me and looked over my shoulder. What the hell is this? It's a sign. It says Hungry Horse, I yelled. He looked at me and glared. I grabbed his arm and pulled him over to where I could see the sign. Can't you read? He pulled away and rolled his eyes. Read what? It says Hungry Horse, I yelled. What the hell are you talking about? He yelled back. I pointed at the sign. Look, the name of the town. The man sighed. There's no sign there. I got angry and was about to yell at the agent when out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone walking towards us from out of the woods and in the direction of the town. It was Irene, the older woman from the hardware store. My eyes lit up and I pointed at her. Irene! I yelled excitedly. The agent turned to face the old woman. His eyes widened in surprise, and he opened his mouth to say something. But before he could, Irene hit him and sent him flying into a tree. You shouldn't have come back, Ranger, she hissed. With lightning speed, she charged the agent with the glasses. Run! I yelled and jumped into the car. It was too late for the agent. Irene had already snapped his neck. I frantically ran into the unmarked car and tried to start it. The engine sputtered and failed to turn over. Irene stood directly in front of me, blocking my path back to the cabin. What the F are you? I yelled. You should have never come here, she said. You have no idea what you're getting yourself into. What the hell is going on? I yelled. She snarled and lunged forward. Her teeth had grown sharp and she snapped at me, but I evaded her bite and rammed my fist into her stomach.
God damn it!
I yelled. I grabbed her shoulders and threw her into the side of the car. She slid across the hood and fell to the ground. I jumped around the car and kicked her twice in the ribs.
I'm going to kill you, I said.
She smiled. I've been dead for years, honey. I was about to punch her again when a hand grabbed my arm and yanked me backwards. I spun around and stared at the person who grabbed my arm. It was Thomas, my partner. He had followed the agents and I.
What the hell are you doing? I yelled.
Don't be stupid. We have to get back to the cabin. I looked at him and shook my head.
No, we can't run from these things,
I said flabbergasted.
What the hell is wrong with you?
He slapped me hard across the face.
Shut up. Shut the F up. Just shut up.
I rubbed my chest and looked at Thomas in disbelief.
What the hell are you talking about?
His eyes were wide open with panic. I heard Irene starting to get up.
You have to leave now, right frickin' now.
He grabbed me by the collar and pushed me into the driver's seat of the dead agent's car.
Get in, he yelled, and drive.
What about you? I asked.
I can't fight them anymore. You know how many Rangers they've taken? He said. Just get out of here.
We just found out about the town yesterday. How do you know this shit?
I yelled.
You just found out about the town, he replied.
The hell does that mean?
Just go. I'll keep Irene occupied. Get back to the cabin and read my journal.
I don't believe this shit.
He nodded.
I know.
I pulled a 180 and sped back down the road towards the cabin. I saw Thomas jump on Irene in the rearview mirror. He looked bigger than he usually does. He was standing on top of her, pinning her arms to the ground.
Screw you!
Irene yelled. Thomas punched her in the face and she went limp.
Stay down, bitch.
The last thing I saw was Thomas running towards the town. I'm back at the cabin and reading through his journal. There's so much I never knew about him.
Hey guys, it's Sam again. I finished reading Thomas's journal. I can't believe I trusted him. Thomas knew everything. He knew what the town was all along. He knew Irene would come after me, and he didn't tell me anything. I feel like such an idiot. Every single national park has one of these towns. He has been the head of a team of people called the Watchers, a branch of a company called ARC, Anomaly Research Corporation, assigned to monitor Hungry Horse, to make sure that the people who go missing in national parks are found before the town can get them.
Jeez, why didn't I figure this out sooner? Why did I trust him? Stupid, stupid Sam. I read some more of his journal. It explained that the towns might be sentient and can choose who could see and interact with them, and how national parks are only founded when one of these towns blink into existence. Yellowstone is the first and has the largest town. But the towns aren't the main threat. It's what the people who get taken turn into. When they get taken, their minds are changed and become something else. Something sinister. I flip to another page, and it explains that the town doesn't take everyone. Some people are harder for the town to influence, and they can resist its power. These people are called Watchers. Watchers can still be taken, but it's rare. I think Hungry Horse just took the last Watcher in Yellowstone. There's a phone number and a note written inside the front cover of the journal. It says to call the number if Thomas is missing or if he seems off, and to tell the person who picks up on the other end that Thomas has been compromised.
This is frickin' insane, I thought to myself. I set the journal aside and looked out the window. The sun was setting, and it cast a beautiful orange glow over the mountains. I could hear the river flowing nearby. I heard a noise outside and turned around. A large shadow moved quickly across the trees near the cabin. I watched as it approached the edge of the woods. It was Thomas. He didn't look injured at all, despite the fight with Irene. He ran to the door and locked it as he stepped onto the porch. I looked out the window at Thomas. "Why aren't you injured?" I asked through the window. "They can't hurt me anymore," he answered. "Who are they?" I asked. "The town," he whispered.
"The town?"
"Yeah."
"What happened to your team?" I asked.
"He's dead. He's gone."
"Is that why you never told me about the town?" I asked.
"I didn't want to scare you."
"How do you know that Irene would come after me?"
"The town let me know," he said.
"The town? What?"
"You know what I mean," he said. "The town tells you stuff because you're a watcher."
"The town tells you stuff because you're a watcher?" I asked.
"Yes," he whispered.
"What the F?"
"It's not important."
"Your journal didn't say the town was intelligent," I said.
"It's alive," he responded. "It thinks and it feels. It's a living entity. Its mind is vast and powerful."
"It talks to you?" I asked.
"Sometimes."
"What does it say?"
"Everything, everything," he replied. I was dumbstruck.
"That's impossible."
"It's true. Now please let me inside," he loudly begged. I noticed something was off with his voice.
"Why do you sound different?" I asked.
"Because you're making me nervous."
"You're freaking me out," I yelled.
"Please let me in," he repeated.
I looked him up for a few minutes without saying anything. There was something about his face that made me curious, something that seemed odd. Finally, I shook my head.
"I'm sorry, Thomas."
He threw his body at the door.
"Let me in!"
"I can't do that, Thomas," I said calmly.
I unlocked the gun locker and grabbed the only shotgun we had. I pointed it at him and waited. Thomas stopped moving and leaned against the door. His breathing became shallow and quick.
"Sammy, you're my best friend," he started to say.
"I'm sorry, Thomas, but I can't open the door."
"Stop lying," he yelled. "Open the frickin' door."
He started throwing himself against it again. Panicking, I pushed the table and couch in front of it.
"Samuel," he screamed, "open this door."
I just ignored him and went upstairs and laid on the bed. He kept banging on the door for an hour. Eventually, he stopped banging on the door, but I could still hear him yelling. I think I might just call that number he wrote down in his journal. Maybe ARC would send someone to deal with Thomas. I dialed the number. It rang three times before a man picked up and said,
"Hello, Thomas?"
I sat there silently.
"Hello?"
he asked again. "It got Thomas," I yelled.
"Are you safe?"
the man asked. "No, I'm not frickin' safe," I screamed. "Thomas had become one of those things from Hungry Horse, and now he's here, and he's trying to break into the cabin."
"Hold on," he said. "We'll send someone right away. Is anyone else with you?"
"Just me," I answered.
"Okay, stay put and don't let him inside the cabin," he said.
Then he hung up. I laid back down on the bed and tried to ignore the sounds coming from downstairs. I could hear Thomas pounding against the door again.
I was terrified that ARC wouldn't show up soon enough. Then suddenly, I heard a car pull up outside. I jumped off the bed and rushed downstairs and looked out the window. There were men with rifles standing outside. I saw one of them run to the cabin. The banging at the door stopped. Thomas had noticed them. I heard Thomas roar and the sound of gunshots. I watched as the men loaded Thomas, who was still alive somehow, into the back of the van. The two men got into the van and drove off as another car pulled up to the cabin. A man in a white lab coat stepped out and walked up to the door, knocking on it. "Open the door, Sam. Don't make this harder than it has to be."
"Who the hell are you?"
"My name is Dr. Jaden Oxblood," he said.
"Well, what the hell do you want?" I demanded.
"I need to talk to you about Thomas," he said.
"I don't have time for your bullshit. Just leave me alone," I yelled at him.
I heard him sign, and that's when I felt an arm grab my shoulder and something prick my neck. I started the curse, and the world faded to black. I woke up on the couch about 30 minutes later. Looking around, I saw that Dr. Oxblood was sitting in a chair across from me.
"Now that everything has calmed down, you're going to have to tell me everything you know," he said.
"I guess I don't have a choice, guys. I'll update you after I talk to Dr. Oxblood."
Sorry about the long wait, guys. So let me explain what happened while I was gone. Oxblood drove me to the headquarters of ARC. Once there, Dr. Oxblood let me into his office and told me to sit down. He locked the door and sat across from me. The room was filled with bookshelves and pictures of presidents and generals from many wars. On the walls were weapons that I didn't recognize.
"So, tell me about the town," he said.
"What makes you think I know anything about the town?" I asked.
"I have reason to believe you are aware of its existence," he said.
"Fine. What do you want to know?" I asked.
"Tell me everything you know about the town," he said.
"Everything?" I asked.
"All of it."
I told him about the day Thomas told me about the town, our trip to Hungry Horse, and how Thomas had stayed behind to fight Irene. He listened intently as I spoke. He was taking notes while I talked and occasionally asked me a question. When I finished telling him everything he wanted to know, he stood up and walked over to a cabinet and opened it. He reached inside and pulled out a small silver box and placed it at his desk.
"What's that?" I asked.
"It's a key," he answered. "One day, you'll need it."
"Why would I ever need a key?" I asked.
"You'll find out.
If you really want to find out what happened to your friend and figure out what the town is, you'll use this key to unlock the secrets of the town."
"Why should I trust you?" I asked.
"I can't tell you that. You'll have to learn to trust me in time."
He handed me the key. It was heavier than I expected it to be. I looked at it for a long moment before putting it into my pocket.
"What do you plan on doing with me?"
"You're a very valuable asset to us," he said. "We want you to become the newest watcher of Yellowstone." I stared at him for a second, remembering what I had read in Thomas's journal. What the hell is a watcher exactly?
"It's a title given to humans who have been chosen by ARC to help protect the world from the supernatural," he said.
"Doesn't ARC already have watchers?" I asked.
"Yes, they have many watchers, but none of them have ever entered one of the towns without changing, like you.
You are the first human to enter one of those towns and return without becoming a monster," he answered. I sat there and thought about it.
"So if I agree to become a watcher, what are the risks?" I asked.
"There are no guarantees,"
he said. The risk of your life, your sanity, and possibly losing your humanity are all high.
So what happens if I decline? I asked.
We will kill you, he answered. I laughed.
Why do you think I'll accept? I asked.
He smiled.
Because you want to save your best friend Thomas and you want answers.
Are you saying you could give me those answers? I asked.
Not yet. But once you become a Watcher, I will be able to teach you everything you need to know.
How long until I can become a Watcher? I asked.
He smiled. You've been a Watcher ever since you read the journal.
I stared at him for a minute before shaking my head. You can't be serious, I exclaimed.
I am completely serious, I sighed.
All right, so what exactly do you expect me to do? I don't know any more about the town than you do.
I know that much, he replied.
So why did you ask me here then?
To offer you a job.
A job?
Yes, a job as a Watcher. I want you to become one of us, he answered.
What kind of job? I asked.
In order to become an official Watcher, you must become a member of ARC, he answered.
What does that entail?
You have to sign an agreement stating that you will work for us. You will also be required to undergo training and take a test to prove yourself.
And what do I get in return for signing this agreement?
A bigger paycheck than you've ever seen.
I laughed. Seriously?
The pay is good, he said. But the real benefit is the knowledge that you're helping to keep the world safe from monsters, demons, and other threats to humanity. Not everyone gets that chance.
Sounds good to me, I said.
Good. Congratulations.
He unlocked the door with the key and we left the room together. On our way out, a man dressed in a park ranger uniform approached me.
This is your new partner, Dr. Oxblood said. Welcome to ARC, he said.
Do you mind if I ask your name? I asked.
My name is John.
I shook his hand. Nice to meet you, John.
Likewise, he said.
All right, well, I guess this is goodbye for now, Oxblood. I'm sure I'll see you soon, I said.
You better hope you do, he joked.
After leaving the building, John and I got into his car and drove off.
So where are we going? I asked.
Back to your cabin. We arrived at my cabin. The sun was setting and the sky was getting dark. We got out of the car and headed towards the cabin. Once inside, I sat on the couch and looked at John.
So what's going to happen now? I asked.
That depends on you, he answered.
What do you mean?
John took out a bottle of whiskey and poured himself a drink. I watched as he drank most of it before answering. I intend to train you to become a Watcher. Until then, you'll be living with me, he said.
Living with you? I asked.
For the next couple of months, he answered. I'll help you get used to being a Watcher, so that when it comes time to choose your own partner, you'll be able to keep them safe. You'll also start to learn things about ARC that even some of our agents don't know.
What kinds of things? I asked.
I can't really explain it to you, he answered. It will only make sense once you're trained. I nodded.
Fine.
Drink up, he said. We'll need to get you settled in. I laughed and poured myself some whiskey. John says training begins in an hour. I'm going to take a nap before he trains me. I was woken up from my nap by the sound of shattering glass and John yelling for me to get my ass downstairs. I ran down the stairs and into the kitchen.
What happened?
It wasn't John who answered my question.
Hello, Samuel. It seems I got the upper hand this time,
Irene said, holding John by the shoulders. She looked much younger than when I had last saw her. She was wearing a black dress, white gloves, and her hair was done up. She was beautiful and terrifying at the same time.
"What did you do to Thomas?"
I asked.
"Thomas was a fool, Samuel. He chose to stay behind to protect you. He made his choice, and my town changed him. I would have killed you both if you hadn't escaped. But now you're mine again, and I'm going to enjoy every minute of it."
"What are you talking about? What do you mean, your town?" I asked. Irene smirked. Her eyes sparkled with hatred.
"My town is a demon. The town is a creature created by the demon king Azazel. He built our town to serve as his prison. He put all the monsters in there so they could be one day released upon your world."
I was speechless. My mind was reeling from the news of the town.
"Who are you?" I finally managed to say. "I am the gatekeeper of the demon kingdom. I'm here to destroy the world and end life as we know it," she said.
"Let me go,"
John shouted. She slammed him against the wall and held him there with ease.
"You're not going anywhere until I decide otherwise," she said, smiling.
"Release him," I yelled. She looked at me and laughed.
"You don't seem to understand, Samuel. I control this place. Nobody's going to help you."
She let go of John and walked towards me.
"You don't scare me, and I know you can't hurt me," she said.
That's when I remembered the silver key Dr. Oxblood had given me.
"Where did you get that?" she snarled.
"Wouldn't you like to know?" I quipped it back at her. I suddenly felt something strange. It was like my body was being pulled away from my soul. I struggled to hold on to it.
"What are you doing?"
she screamed. I tried to resist, but it was too late. My soul was gone.
"Give me the key!"
Irene screamed, running towards me. Suddenly, I was back in my body again. I was kneeling on the floor in front of Irene, holding onto my head with one hand and clutching my chest with the other. I could see everything in slow motion. I watched as Irene charged towards me, her face twisted with rage. I stood up and grabbed her by the neck, squeezing tightly.
"Let go of me!" she screamed.
I squeezed harder. I felt her throat bulge and blood began to leak out of her mouth. I threw her through the window she had broken in through. I watched as she got up and glared at me before turning and heading back towards Hungry Horse. I turned around, looking over at John, who was standing in the doorway, a deep gash running down the left side of his face. He smiled at me.
"You might not need as much training as I thought you would," he said. "That was pretty impressive."
I felt a surge of pride. "I'll be right back," I said.
"Be careful, Samuel," he said. "Don't get yourself killed."
I smiled.
"I wouldn't dream of it."
What is happening to me, you guys? I followed Irene back to her house in Hungry Horse. I was hoping to kill her, but right as I was about to enter through a window in the basement, I heard her say,
"You dumbasses ready yet? We need 5 more humans and we'll be powerful enough to open another Hellgate. I want to open the next one in Canada."
I backed away, looking in through a window on the bottom floor, and I saw about 20 of the townspeople gathered inside. That's when I turned and ran. I ran as fast as I could, dialing John's number as I crossed Hungry Horse's border back into Yellowstone. John answered his phone almost immediately.
"Where are you?"
he asked. I ignored his question and asked one of my own instead.
"Are there any people camping in Yellowstone tonight?"
I asked.
"I'm not sure why."
"Irene only needs to take 5 more people before she could create another town. And she's got a group together to go out and find some," I said. He swore under his breath.
"How big is the group?"
"About 20, I said.
"All right, I have a plan. We need to stop her before she could take more people. Are there any people camping close to Hungry Horse? I question him.
There's a bunch camping around Old Faithful, he said.
How far away are we from them? I asked.
I don't know exactly. It's hard to tell how far away anything is in Montana at night. But they should be within a half an hour or less, he answered.
All right, listen, I have a plan. Can you get to the campground before midnight? I asked.
Yeah, I could get there in 30 minutes.
Good. Get your gear together and meet me at the glacier. Don't forget to bring your guns, I ordered.
Roger that. See you at the glacier.
I hung up the phone and stared at it for several seconds before dialing Oxblood's number.
Sam,
I cut him off. No time. I need you to send a team out to the campground at Glacier, I told him.
All right. I'll have a team heading out there as soon as possible, he answered.
I hung up the phone as I began to run faster than any human had ever ran before. I thought about Irene and how close she was to opening another Hellgate. I was filled with rage knowing that I might die trying to stop her, but I couldn't think about that now. I needed to focus on what I was doing. If Irene opened another gate, who knows what would happen? The moon was slowly rising into the sky, casting long shadows across the ground. The air was cold. The temperature dropped as I ran. I could hear the sounds of the wolves chasing their prey somewhere nearby. As I ran towards the campground near Glacier, I could smell smoke emanating from the campground. I shivered at the familiar scent and continued to run. As I got closer to Glacier, I noticed the campground was packed full of tents and RVs. I started hearing gunshots and screams. I looked around frantically for ARC operatives, but it did not appear that they were here yet. There was a large fire burning in the middle of the campground. It looked like someone had set it. I kept running, weaving between the tents, until I found a tent that was completely shredded on one side and engulfed in flames. There was a body inside. It was completely mangled. I could barely make out any details of the person's face. There was no way of telling what race or sex the corpse was. But whoever the person was, they definitely weren't a friend of Irene's. I looked around the campground again and saw nothing but chaos. People were screaming, crying, and running away from Irene's monsters as John fought them off. Suddenly, I hear the sound of a helicopter. I looked up at the night sky and saw an ARC helicopter swooping in. It hovered over the middle of the campground, their lights shining brightly.
ARC, come on, hurry! I yelled.
I was still a few hundred feet away from the fight when I saw one of those things jump onto the roof of an RV and launch itself at the helicopter. It smashed through the cockpit window and tore the pilot out of her seat. I watched helplessly as the helicopter careened out of control, smashing into the last section of the campground that wasn't blocked by Irene's people. The helicopter exploded, sending debris everywhere and causing panic amongst the remaining campers. I took off running, making my way towards the center of the campground where John and his men were fighting the creatures. He kept them at bay, but they were slowly overwhelming him. That's when Irene grabbed him by the throat and lifted him off the ground, her face inches from his. Her long red nails glistened in the moonlight.
"What do you think you're doing?" she growled.
John struggled to speak.
"Why are you doing this? What do you want?"
he wheezed. She leaned in closer and brought her lips to John's ear.
"What do I want?"
she whispered, then pushed him back, sending him flying into the dirt.
"I want your world," she yelled.
She pointed at John and the campers.
"And nothing you can do will stop me,"
she roared with laughter. She stepped forward and placed her boot on John's neck.
"Now you're going to watch as my people slaughter every single person you were trying to protect."
My vision went red, and I let out the loudest, most visceral roar I've ever heard. The fighting instantly stopped as everyone winced and covered their ears. Everyone but Irene, that is. Irene turned and snarled at me.
Hey, assbutt!
I sneered at her. Well, looks like I'm fighting Irene, I thought to myself. If I don't update you guys within 48 hours, I probably lost the fight. Wish me luck. I really could use it. I stood in front of her, my hands balled into fists at my sides. I looked into Irene's eyes as she glared back at me with pure hatred in her own. Do you really think you stand a chance against me? I am the strongest being you will ever have to face. You are nothing compared to what I can do. She yelled, her voice filled with venom. Watch me, I responded. I took several steps and leaned forwards, letting the muscles in my legs tense up. My shoulders tightened, and I could feel my back arch. I let out another primal roar as I prepared to pounce. Irene smirked. Her eyes sparkled in the light of the burning fires.
Go ahead, you'll never touch me, Watcher, she taunted. You're far too...
I didn't give her a chance to finish. I sprang forward, slamming into Irene and knocking us both to the ground. I felt her claws rip through my jacket as we fell, but I didn't care. I wanted to tear her apart. We rolled over and over, punching and clawing at each other. I tried to use my enhanced strength to pin her down, but she was too quick and dexterous. I managed to hit her in the stomach, but she simply grabbed my arm and threw me across the campground. I slammed into the side of an RV, which sent it rolling. The impact knocked all the wind out of me and left me stunned for a moment. I laid there in pain, unable to move while Irene walked over to me.
You should have stayed in your cabin, you pathetic little watcher, she screamed.
I rolled onto my back and wiped the blood from my mouth as I watched her approach.
I'm going to enjoy ripping you apart.
Not if I can help it, I growled. I rose to my knees and let out a defiant roar.
I'm going to end you, Irene!
She laughed.
Do you know how many watchers before you thought that? She taunted.
Maybe I'll be the first to actually do it, I said.
Won't be the last. I've been killing watchers since before you were born. And I'll continue to kill them until my power is absolute.
Not today, I promised. I didn't have to wait very long to test my words. Irene charged at me, and with one fluid motion, I grabbed her by the neck and flung her to my right. She smashed into a picnic table. The force of the impact knocked the entire thing over, spilling food and drinks everywhere. Irene let out a scream of anger and frustration as she scrambled to her feet. She picked up the picnic table and threw it at me. I used my enhanced strength to leap out of the way, but the table splintered and cracked against the side of the RV. I turned to see Irene charging at me again. I sidestepped her attack and punched her in the stomach. She grunted and doubled over, falling to her knees. I kicked her in the face, sending her crashing backward. Irene got to her feet and charged at me once more, swinging the broken remains of a picnic table around like a weapon. I ducked under it and kicked her in the chest, slamming her back into a tree. She fell to the ground, gasping for breath. Irene struggled to get to her feet.
You won't kill me. You'll never be able to kill me, she said.
I could tell she really was starting to doubt that.
You're wrong. We both know I can, I said.
Irene finally was able to stand up. She brought the broken remains of a picnic table around like a shield.
Come on then, Watcher. Let's finish this.
I lunged forward, my hands outstretched. I slammed them into the wooden railing of the picnic table, shattering it and knocking Irene to the ground. I grabbed her by the throat and lifted her off the ground.
You will pay for everything you've done, every life you took, I growled.
You'll never kill us all,
she spat in my face.
More of you humans join us every day,
she began laughing. I gripped her head and twisted hard. Her neck snapped like a twig and the red light faded from her eyes. I turned to look at the chaos that was taking place at the campground behind me. I let out a primal, earth-shaking roar and tore into the last of Irene's group. My rage was so powerful that the ground shook and the trees toppled. The sound of metal screaming in protest echoed throughout the night as I fought. It was beautiful. I lost track of time as I killed each and every one of them, leaving no survivors. They had made their choice, and now they would suffer the consequences. The carnage was horrible, and I hadn't even reached Hungry Horse yet. I tore the last of the group apart as I reached the town, and as I did, the sun finally started to rise, and the residents of Irene's town were already up and about. They were in for a surprise. I started at the diner, tearing the door off the hinges and slaughtering every last resident inside. I stormed through the town, destroying anything that got in my way. I moved quickly and efficiently, tearing through a row of houses, smashing through walls and breaking furniture. The citizens were panicked. They were running everywhere, trying to escape, only to find themselves trapped in the middle of my rampage. I heard the screams and cries of terror as I destroyed the town, and soon it was done. I had slaughtered everyone who lived there, and I was left standing in the center of a pile of dead bodies. It was over. Irene had failed. The people of her town were gone. I grinned and called Dr. Oxblood. He would definitely enjoy hearing about this.
Good job, Samuel. I heard it was quite the show. I wish I'd been there to witness it, Oxblood said.
It was incredible. I don't think I'll ever forget it, I replied.
Excellent work, Samuel. Your work here is done. Go home and take some time to rest. There will be more blood to spill soon enough. These towns aren't the only weird thing about national parks, Oxblood said.
Understood, I said.
I'll contact you when I need you again, Oxblood added. I hung up the phone and closed my eyes.
What was next? I couldn't wait to find out.
I'll let you guys know when I encounter other anomalies. Thanks for all the advice.